Welcome to the little red barn, where we're bouncing off the walls like a squirrel on meth with coffee to spare. We're racing through farm talk with energy to share. From tractors to livestock, we jump topic to topic, faster than a combine at harvest time. So buckle up, friends, and hold on tight. The Little Red Barn Podcast starts now.
In this episode of the Little Red Barn Podcast, the very first episode of 2026. Happy New Year, Charlie Hooyan.
Hey, it's a great year. Off good.
Nothing broken yet?
Not yet.
We made it a couple days in, and you've broken nothing.
Maybe a froze up auger, but that's it.
Froze, but it isn't broken.
But it's not broken.
Not broken. I expect that will change this coming week. I'm sure we'll have the Hooyan Grain Broken Report. That's going to be the new feature for 2026. What did Charlie break this week? And we're just going to keep, we'll have the whiteboard behind us here, and we'll just make a list of everything that you've broken.
You better put in a big whiteboard.
I've got a 4x8 sheets that I just moved around over there. Will that do it?
Well, it's getting better. You're getting closer.
Getting closer. If I write really small.
If you write really small.
All right.
Because you know, Ryan, nobody breaks anything around our place except for Charlie.
That's right. It's all, and even if something else happens, it is your fault. So
exactly.
It goes on your list.
Absolutely.
Well, Happy New Year, bud. It's great to be with you again with the first podcast of 2026, episode 120. Dear heavens, 120 of these under our belts so far. Nice to talk with you again about the world of agriculture, and also want to throw a shout out to our sponsor once again as we start the year, Mac America Ag Finance. We'll talk more about Mac America later on, of course, and all the things that they offer. But Charlie, it's exciting. We're starting off the year, January, a busy month. This month we have Fort Wayne Farm Show. I'm speaking in multiple locations. You're running around breaking things, but there's all sorts of we're in the heart of meeting season. I think we talked about this back in December. The heart of meeting season, this is where everything that happens in an off season, whether it's your seed meetings, every seed dealer has a meeting, well, multiple meetings somewhere, whether it's your parts suppliers, your precision planting guys, hint, 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 there's one in the room, but Fort Wayne Farm Show, everything going on this month. Charlie, highlights for you this month.
Oh, we got to go with the Fort Wayne Farm Show.
Yeah. What day is your favorite day to go to the farm show?
Whenever day I can get out of town.
See, I prefer Tuesday. I prefer Tuesday because the show's just getting started, and that's when, honestly, if the weather cooperates, that's the day that I feel most farmers show up. I think it's Tuesday, the day that most hardcore farmers, decision makers, folks that want to talk, show up at the Fort Wayne Farm Show. Wednesday is the day, especially late afternoon, when the families show up and you got the kids and the strollers and everybody. Tuesday and Wednesday both are filled with FFA kids like Matthew over here, that the only reason they go to the farm show is to get the damn Napa bucket so that I don't get one when I get to go past the Napa spot. He takes the bucket, the FFA kit, and the yardsticks and buckets, and then Thursday is the do-nothing day. They should probably just shut down the farm show early.
I think they do, don't they?
Well, we run out early all the time. But I need to ask our guest here, Rich Schlipp, Schlipp Precision Ag, going to be at the Fort Wayne Farm Show running his own booth this year. Rich, you were nodding when I gave my ideas of who shows up when. Do you differ with me at all? What's your favorite day of the farm show?
No, you're right. It is. You're right on as far as the spectator turnout and those days. Wednesday does get to be a long day going in later in the evening. And you would expect a lot of what we would call city folks or hobby farmers, but it does give an opportunity for those growers that do have a daytime job to get there in the evening, and we still have a lot of good conversations. Your comment about Thursday shutting down early, that is very true. It seems like about 2 o'clock the foot traffic dies off quite a bit.
Yeah, and my foot traffic picks up as I'm tearing down my booth and heading out the door. Don't tell the organizers of the show. They tell us every year you're not allowed to do that, and every year I'm gone by about 2:45. The truck's loaded, and I'm on my way back. So, but good stuff anyway. Fort Wayne Farm Show's coming up, so make sure you do. It's the Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday. What is that, the 12th, 13th, 14th? or 13, 14, 15, somewhere in there that week. That is the farm show. I'll be there. Rich will be there. Charlie will be there wandering around. Are you going to wear the heated vest to the farm show, Charlie?
I think I'm going to pass on that. That'll get a little bit warm.
This Yahoo shows up to the studio here. Now, granted, we flipped the calendar into the new year, and it's cold. It's cold, I grant you that, but I've run into the only person I know now that wanders around in a fully loaded Milwaukee heated vest. You've got the little settings button here on the chest. Come on, dude. Come on.
Well, not only that, but you didn't look at the door because we rolled in style.
Oh, good. What'd you roll in?
We rolled in with a semi.
Is there a semi parked out Red Barn Studios?
Yes, there is.
Rich, you know, I heard that noise. I'm like, oh, it must be somebody going. It wasn't somebody going down the road. It's this guy. What the hell did you do that for?
Well, you know, we got to, you know, Red Barn Studios is right around the corner.
Yeah, so you were delivering a load of grain, weren't you?
Well, we're going to do that on our way
home. On our way back. All right. Well, hope that goes well for you. Oh, my goodness. I drove the semi this time. That's why he brought you along. Dad's got Matthew Huyen sitting over here in the corner in his spectator throne. This is why he brought you along. He's got the heated vest, and when it comes time to dump, he's going to send you out to open those hoppers, isn't he? Yep, he is. He's going to sit in his little seat, heated cab, with his heated vest on, and he's going to make you work. That's why you got the leather gloves. Shame on you, Charlie.
Well, that's why you have kids, right?
All right, well, we're going to be careful where this goes. We know what, I think Charlie just joined the Amish order. I don't know. Anyway, so, Charlie, who'd you bring this time? We mentioned him already. Rich slipped for his egg, but why?
The one thing that I like about Rich is he's able to reinvent a planner, take in an old planner, bring it up to speed, and apply the newest technologies to it. And allow a farmer to step into a newer planter with little cost. There's some cost involved with it, but they can step into a newer planter by using their old planter.
Okay.
And they can revamp their old planter and save a lot of money to get the newest technologies applied to their planter.
Okay, and I think before we talk about that, because I think that's interesting, I think we need to step back and let Rich explain a little bit what the heck it is you do. What is Schlipp Precision Ag, and more importantly, why? Why Schlipp Precision Ag? What's your origin story, Rich?
Okay, thanks. Yeah, Schlipp Precision Ag has been around for over 20 years. I personally grew up in Central Illinois and married and my wife from out here, and we're actually on my wife's home farm, and we lived in Central Illinois for 5 years, and through a series of events, the Lord brought us out here to Northern Indiana, and I was dairying, at the time, I was dairying with my father-in-law, had some health issues of dust and allergies and those sort of things, so we chose to exit the dairy. And at about the same time, I started working with Bex Hybrids as a seed dealer for them. And through that experience with working with farmers with their seed needs, I realized they also had equipment needs with their planters. Mm-hmm. And of course, so you think back at, 20 years ago where we were at that time, the finger pickup technology was common. It was the early stages of the vac technology, and there was a lot of challenges that growers didn't understand. And as I learned that, I reached out to Precision Planting to inquire about being a dealer with them to help our seed customers with their planters meters at that time. So when I started working with Precision Planting, we had finger pickup components. We didn't even have a complete meter at that time, and the Keaton Seed Firmer. That was our portfolio that we had to offer. And
those were monumentally better than anything, because before that it was radial bean cups and seed plates, basically.
Sure. In that time, as we looked at, we had all graded seed primarily, where we had the couple different sizes of round seeds, a couple different sizes of flats. And then we tried to get a meter to perform based on the seed that we had. And whether you had a Kinsey or a Deer finger meter made a difference on what seed type you want, size, the shape that you wanted. And we had to be a lot more specific. And so we spent quite a bit of time tearing down, rebuilding finger meters. And that's kind of where we cut our teeth at. And worked with Precision a couple years. And then they came out with the monitoring system, which gave us the ability to add technology to the planter that we could actually read what our seed spacing was, what our percent skips and doubles were, so we could fine-tune our meters even a lot better yet. And a grower knowing the field how good a job he was doing, and gave him information that he could use to make small tweaks on his planter while he was in the field to do a better job. And so as time went on then, well, from that point on, with the 2020 seed monitor being introduced, we were involved in alpha and beta testing every year since, over the years for new products that came out. So we were always on the bleeding edge of being involved with what was coming from, specifically from Precision Planting, and then there was a couple other companies we worked with as well. So that was good because we could learn up front, so that when growers would come to us and they'd say, hey, is there value in us considering this, we could talk from experience, what we learned on our farm. And at that time, over the years, our farm operation got pretty decent size, up close to 1,000 acres, and then we've actually just gradually tapered off. And so now we're down to about 600 acres, but it's basically turned into a 600-acre research farm. Mm-hmm. For the technologies and the different products that we sell and use.
So you're still focusing, again, because when I think planters, and part of this is because of my no-till brain, because I'm 100% no-till, as we've kind of covered before on the podcast, but you're talking predominantly meters and seed delivery technology, but you also have branched out into, when you talk about building a planter or rebuilding a planter, you're talking about those everything that goes around that meter. So your row cleaner units, your press wheels, you're talking about all of that. How has that technology changed over the years?
Sure. That's a very good question. And when I was referring to meters, I was referring back to the early days. Mm-hmm. Because through the time, Precision Planting has got a meter that is just hard to argue that there's a better one.
And they can't get it any better than what they have right now.
I mean, how can you average better than 100% singulation?
Well, Charlie wants 110, so.
So we have that area figured out and have good products for that. And then they started going into downforce control. At that time, spring downforce was real common. Then airbags came available. Well, then Precision Planting came out with a unit to automatically control airbag pressure based on downforce readings on the row unit. And that was planter-wide, a huge game changer at that time. Well, since then, they've come out with hydraulic units that mount on each individual row unit. Mm-hmm. So what we were looking at a 30 or 40-foot wide planter average, control and down pressure based on information over the last 10 seconds. Now we're looking at information and controlling each row individually up to 5 times a second. So in theory, we could have a different down pressure reading every 18 inches across the field on each row. And so with the technology changing, we've went from a 40-foot planter, 16-row, 30-inch, to now a 40-foot planter that has 16 one-row planters on it, because each row is controlled and monitored individually.
So let's go to the big boy farmer over here, Mr. Huyen. You mean to tell me that there's that much difference in how a crop turns out? Let's use corn, for example. How your corn crop turns out by being able to change down pressure, downforce, which guarantees where that seed is in the seed bed when we plant. and that being be able to monitor that close, and other than just digging a trench with your opener, you know, your double disc openers, digging a trench and putting a seed down in there. Is there that much difference?
Absolutely, Ryan.
Because how?
When we go across our fields, if you look at the average field for us, it has seven different soil types in it.
Sure.
Now, that soil type's going to average between a sandy loam, a rinsalier, and then also a muck, which is a very powdery, very fluffy soil type. So as I'm going across that field with that planter, it's going to hit a sandhill, it's going to hit a rinsalier spot, and it's going to hit a muck spot. And I have seen where the down pressure has absolutely buried the seed into the ground a good 6 inches.
So, but that just means your emergence is out of whack, right? Once that plant's up and going, it's great, right?
The plant never catches up. It doesn't quite get to the GDUs that you really want it to have at the end of the season, and it's reflected in our yield maps.
So based, Rich, on what he just said, seven different soil types, and I agree, most of our fields here in Indiana are that way. You go farther west, and you get into some more of the more homogeneous soils, especially when you get into the plains and Montana. So is it a smart thing to say, or is it a dumb thing to say that precision technology, at least on a planter setup, is more important here, or it's a bigger deal here than farther west? Or is there a different reason why folks may look at things along this line farther west?
I would say the downforce control is important no matter what region you're in, because consistent seeding depth placed in the right temperature and the right moisture is the most important thing. Because our goal is, and I'm talking corn here specifically, sure, our goal is to have every kernel emerge fire at the same time so that they can emerge within 12 hours of each other. That is a really lofty goal. We usually say that it's within 24 hours. So if you see your first spike, you would like to have all its neighbors up in less than 24 hours of each other. And if you don't, if you've got a late emerger, and there's various reasons for a late emerger, you could have a weak seed germ. You could have residue in the seed furrow that's wicking moisture away from the seed. You could have not good seed-to-soil contact, which is typically related to a closing problem. So any of those reasons would cause what we call a late emerger. So if you've got all your seed plants have emerged at the same time, and when they get to be one collar leaf or two collars leaf, if you've got a neighbor that is one collar behind, you can figure about 6 to 7 bushels. And if you had an acre of those, you'd have 6 to 7 bushel loss on that one collar leaf. If it's two collars leaves behind, it's basically a weed. So if we can have, now I'm talking about an area field. Charlie mentioned about different soil types. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. So I can see that on his sandy soils, he might get them all to emerge in a 12 to 24 hour period. But in his tougher soils, they might be 36 hours behind this. But as long as they're consistent plant to plant, he's not going to see that yield loss in that area.
So on a plant by plant basis, you're saying you can see 6 to 7 bushels of yield loss just being one stage behind.
Mm-hmm.
But if it's section by section, you don't see it.
You're not going to see the wide variation.
Okay.
Yeah, because it's the competition to its neighbor.
I've actually seen, Ryan, where singulation that would cause a plant not to produce an ear, and it truly becomes a weed to the rest of the plants around it and cause a yield drag in that area.
Well, and what's really interesting about that, because, you know, again, I've only been at this for a short period of time, but I, you know, a few years back, I made monumental mistake of not having my planter set up right on population. So I planted corn at 44,000. Didn't realize it till I ran out of corn and I had to go get a few more bags of corn. But that 44,000 population, so big competition,
Mm-hmm.
Those sections of the field yielded 200+. Now, that meant, again, they were less yield plant by plants, but they did not cause competition to cause a yield problem. It affected my ROI because I spent too much on seed. But those plants didn't, the competition, I guess, was healthy. So I think what's really interesting is we're talking when we get down into singulation that we can have competition that's not healthy and it becomes a weed, yet it's not. This whole thing is very intriguing to me. Let's go a step farther. So we talked about singulation and the hydraulic depth. You mentioned closing wheels. You mentioned, you know, something not getting closed in quite right. What's changed there over the years?
So a typical closing system for years has been two rubber tires in a V closing system. And then over the years, you know, people say, hey, I can do better than that. And so right now, I'm going to guess there might be 30 different options of different type of closing wheels.
I should have brought the Schaup catalog in because we could have looked in the Schaup catalog as well, the closing wheels we could get.
And so you got a lot of options. And then there's some that's taken it a step further. And, for example, Precision Planting has Furrow Force. It's a two-stage system that can be automatically controlled. So there again, it's taken the ability to add technology and do a better job by sensing and controlling based on what the sensors read. But all of those systems do not take the place of getting out of the cab and digging and making sure you're doing a good job. So your goal is to have every seed at your set depth. And what is that set depth? It varies.
Mm-hmm.
It's based on your soil type, but most importantly, you want to be in consistent moisture. And those of us that no-till, it's easier to hit consistent moisture than some of the growers that do tillage. And then it makes a difference on what type of tillage tools they use, whether they're going to hit consistent moisture or not. And so we want to be planting in moisture. As the seed's laid in the furrow, then we want the closing system to come along and gently pack the soil around the seed so we got good seed-to-soil contact. And then we don't want compaction over the top so that the seedling can emerge without any competition from this compaction on the soil.
So what's the ideal, as you guys have studied over the years, what's the ideal moisture content that you would want to plant into? If I, as a meteorologist, could deliver you exactly what you needed, which I can't, but if I could, what have you guys figured out over the years is the most ideal moisture setup to be planting into?
Well, I'm going to answer it a little bit different way because, here again, technology has given us the ability to add what we call a smart firmer in the soil that has sensors on it that we can actually read things such as soil moisture, and we can read other attributes as well, but in this case, because of talking of moisture. So when we are looking at our smart firmer data, we would like to plant in corn, for example, 30% to 40%.
Okay.
Now, that is not meaning that the soil is 30% moisture. It's meaning that it takes at least 30% of a kernel's weight to absorb moisture in the first, I think it's 24 or 36 hours to fire.
Mm-hmm.
And so the number on the smart firmer reading is a number that correlates there. So if we look at that moisture reading on the smart firmer and it's down to 22, we know that there's a percentage of our time we are not planting our seeds in sufficient moisture to fire in 36 hours.
But if you know you're going to be getting rain, or if you feel you're going to be getting rain within the next whatever, you roll on because you know that's going to get bumped to 40% or whatever.
It's about knowing your soil and being able to, you know, there's some soils. Let me back up. If we're in that environment, my first thought is you go out and put a notch deeper in. Dig down and see if we actually have moisture down there. We got some cases where it's dry. We'll use a row cleaner to wipe back some soil so our row unit can go deeper. That's unusual, but it can happen. But then it's also about knowing your soil. For back to Charlie's farm, where he's in the sandy soils, we're more likely to be planting in dry soil. We got down the peat muck, it might be wet already. And peat's a little more forgiving for planting deeper. Sand's usually a little more forgiving. But if he's got a clay knob that he knows if he goes 2.5 inches deep and the rain forecast comes, and instead of a nice 3-inch or 3-tenth shower, we get a 3-inch gully washer.
You got to seal that over.
Exactly right. So it's still back to the operator has to understand the farm and to be able to make those decisions. But we also have technology that can change that seeding depth on the go based on our smart farmer readings if we want to.
Yeah. So that's interesting. I key in, you say the farmer needs to know his fields, his soils. I just listened to everything that you just went through, and I'm thinking, dear Lord, I know my fields. I know my soils. I know exactly where every pocket of everything is out there. What I don't know is how to deal with all of this crap, all of this data-intensive stuff. Charlie, you love data. I mean, you sit down with your spreadsheets and you go through this stuff all the time, but I think you are probably 25% of the population when it comes to that, and 75% of our farmer group out here are looking at this stuff and it's like, geez, I got to get somebody to do this for me.
And that's where I think where the smart farmer comes into play. That's a technology that I don't have the opportunity to do because we have a case planner, unless that's changed, which is saying no. But I could see that bringing a lot to a John Deere or Kinsey planner because you can make those adjustments and see what's actually out there in that row. With the case planner, what the seed firmer does for me is just plug up the row unit.
Oh, well, you know, at least we're doing something.
It's unfortunate that's the case. A Keaton seed firmer and a smart firmer would just plug it.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I had somebody recommend to me back again when I got started on doing some of this stuff myself, because you know, if you haven't heard my story yet, when we originally got into buying ground and farming, the whole idea was to have somebody else do it for us. And then we are now transitioning to do it ourselves. I had to get educated on the Keaton seed firmer, which is really funny because Rich talks about it as ancient technology. And honestly, it was. It was just this plastic thing to push the seed down in the bottom of the furrow a little bit. But the whole idea was that actually improved your seed depth, and it got at least where that row unit was flowing over. As long as that trench was cut to a certain level, it guaranteed the seed was down in the bottom of it, no matter where it was. And
ensuring good seed-to-soil contact. Correct. Was the key.
Correct. So let's now transition, because Charlie, you let it off. You think it's great that, you know, Schlips can rebuild, rework, retool an older planter to get new technology on an older unit. Let's talk about that a little bit, Rich. What's the idea here, and how much of that does your business make up?
Yeah, that's like we talked a little bit before we started here. We can talk a lot about the different technologies and things that are available, but if we don't have the core basics right, the fundamentals of a corn planter, the normal maintenance, keeping good seed disc openers on, keeping good gauge wheels that are adjusted properly, gauge wheel arms are a high wear item, and keeping nice tight gauge wheel arms that can keep our gauge wheels tight against the seed opener. And most growers may not understand it. The reason that's so critical is if you've got a gap between your gauge wheel and your seed disc opener, it allows soil, typically dry soil, from the top of the soil surface to fall down in the seed trench. And then we've just negated everything we're trying to do of putting a seed into moisture at the bottom of our seed trench. And then we just dump dry soil on top of it that we're pushing down up against the seed. So we've just thrown our emergence possibilities out the window there. So, and then tailwheel bushings. If you've got a V-closing system on your planter, keep your tailwheel bushings tight so that, that you're not shifting the tail wheels or sliding to the sideways and you're running right on top of your seed trench instead of staying right in the middle of the closing wheel. So parallel arm linkages, just commonly overlooked, that there's way too much, for lack of a better term, slop in the joints of the parallel arm. So you've got a lot of vertical and even some side-to-side row unit movement. All that affects how the seed comes down the seed tube, and the ultimately affects seed planting depth, which we talked previously about how important that was. So what we do in our business, we buy, sell, and trade planters. And if we buy a planter, we buy planters that we feel are have a good skeleton to them that can be rebuilt, that whether a grower wants to add technology or various levels of technology, that we can rebuild them, make them mechanically sound, the row units, and then add the technology that fits the farmer's goals. And if we had four farmers in the room here with us, and we each asked each of them, you know, what's your ideal planter, we'd probably have 6 to 8, 10 different ideas. And just like, you know, the three of us here, we've all got different goals. Charlie's got things he's trying to do on his farm, so his goal would be to have his planter set up in a certain way. And obviously the budget might make a little difference on, and the same way with you. I'm in a little bit different scenario because we've got our planter set up with about as much technology as we can put on it, and it changes from year to year because of the testing environment we're in. And so when we start and a grower comes to us and says, this is what I'd like to do, I'm thinking about a different planter or rebuilding one of his own that he already owns, we'll sit down and we'll basically, what's your wish list? What's your goals? We talk through what his tillage practices are, or if he's a no-tiller. Is he pretty much operating by himself, or does he have somebody to help tend fertilizer?
What difference does that make? That's intriguing to me. What difference does that make if he has help or not?
Well, it boils down to number of acres and what he's trying to get done in a certain amount of time. For example, we got our planter set up. We're putting three different types of liquid fertilizer on as we plant. The average grower, if he's trying to cover a number of acres, is saying, I logistically can't handle that and be efficient. And it might be that he has a tender man helping him that, you know, might be retired. And he just works for him a couple weeks in the spring. He physically can't handle a lot of heavy work. So he wants one product set up simple. He can drag one hose to the planter.
And still accomplish 75 acres a day or whatever,
yeah, whatever
his goal is.
His goal is. Yeah. Yes. Yep. Exactly. So, you know, there's a lot to the conversation to help a grower get up set up for success that happens before we ever turn a wrench.
It's very intriguing because I'm just sitting here listening to all of this, and Charlie, this is the story. I got into this to get an education, and I've been educated every year, and now I'm learning a lot of the failures that I've seen crop-wise over the past multiple years. I can actually see maybe not all being traced back to planter or technology or things like that, but I haven't been exceptionally fastidious on certain things regarding planters. I've redone some things from time to time to make things work, but it's an interesting concept here. When you look at getting a planter rebuilt, when you want to take in a shell of your own, what are you looking for? What's Hooey and Grain Farms looking for when they're approaching something like this?
When we're approaching this, we went and I bet you it's been close to 5-6 years ago. We actually put some precision parts on our planter.
A planter you already had?
That we already had.
Okay.
We put on the V-sets that meter the system a lot better. We felt that the case system was seen better days and could use some improvement. It's a complicated seed system compared to what you can get through Precision. And we simplified that and gotten a better picket fence stand, which is what we were after. But like Rich says, you got to watch your budget too, because you can have a lot tied up into a row. So we're still actually chain driven that V-set unit so that we get the precision that we want to drop that seed with our hydraulic drive system that's on our planter. We also wanted to keep the computer system simple for our guys. We didn't want to have to, Dad doesn't want to relearn something new every year.
I understand that.
So we were able, with that system, to keep our Case Pro 700 in place as a planter monitor and our guidance system on our planting tractor. So there was a lot of advantages of looking at that and going, like, we could cherry pick what technologies we want to improve on and move forward with. On the same hand, but at the same time, we also had a John Deere 1770, I think.
That sounds about right.
It's an older planter, but it had older precision technology on it. We were able to see the benefits of air downforce, air force that they have, that system with the air compressor and the bigger air compressor and how it works with the John Deere planter, and experience that. And that was very impressive when we don't have the ability on our Case planter, since it's air down pressure, to put up pressure. And the Air Force allowed us to have up pressure on that John Deere planter. And that really made a big difference because of the boxes that we had on each row unit. And guys don't realize, as that box empties out, how much down pressure that adds or decreases as you're going across that field. And I was impressed with the air system. And like I said, air systems is an old, old technology at this point in time, where it actually leveled out the planting depth for us and allowed us to have a better planting depth, especially going into muck conditions.
So, Rich, I'm going to key off of something that Charlie kind of mentioned, and I hope you can answer this honestly and you don't give me the political answer. But is there differences, or is there a preference, or is there one that's just easier to work on than the others when it comes to, we don't like to play the color wars a lot here, but when we're talking brands of planter, are some just more susceptible to outfitting the way that we want to on technology, whether it's preference or just systems involved? Or is it, like a lot of other things, not necessarily that much different?
Yeah, there. We work, I'm trying to think if there's ever a brand of planter we haven't worked on that's common in our area, and I don't think there is. We do work on probably, I'm going to say, north of 80% of our planters that we work with are John Deere.
Okay.
And part of it is, there's two reasons. One is, that's kind of the market share in this area.
Valid.
And the other thing is, because we work on so many of them, we actually have manufactured for us some custom parts to make our installs either quicker to do, more professional looking, that helps us as a dealer, one, build a nicer product, but then also have a product that you as a grower can be proud of owning, because it is nice, it's well put together, and it looks good.
So I'm more likely then to go talk to my neighbor and go, hey, have you seen this?
Yes, exactly. But then back to why I would choose one over the other, I do like the Deere frame, maybe ahead of some of the others, from the standpoint it is easier, because we are northern Indiana and fertilizer on planters is a lot more common. I mentioned to you that we put three types of fertilizer on. A lot of the planters we build will have two different fertilizer products on it. And it's a lot easier to do on a Deere NT frame, or I'm not real sure which model Charlie has, but on a planter similar to what his Case would be. And some of it, it's It's kind of like a Ford Chevy debate. You know, there's guys that's going to argue the Case Planter is better. There's guys going to argue the Deere. Quite honestly, it boils down to where you can get service, mm-hmm. and you're going to find pockets that are really strong in specific colors. The you know, we work on a few Kinsey planters, and there's some guys that really like the lift and twitch feature. There's challenges with that planter when it comes to putting fertilizer systems on it. And so are we prejudiced toward a brand? I would say if we're going to be called prejudiced, we probably do lean toward the Deere, but it's a more of that type of a frame.
It's a practical reason.
Front fold frame, and whether it's a whether it's the Deere frame, the AGCO has a frame similar to it. Harvest International's got a big heavy frame. The Case 2000 series frame is a good frame. And then, you know, it boils down to kind of, I guess you could call a family preference. Some sure. Some families are hard green, some are hard red, some are they're just colorblind. It as long as it's reasonable, they'll run it. Yeah.
So I've got two questions that we're going to finish with. I told you this would go fast. We're at 41 minutes so far. So two questions to finish with. First one is this. If you've got two different categories of farm folks, folks that are relatively new and haven't done much in the precision game, you know, basically finger pickups has gotten, you know, we're trying to work towards singulation, but we're early in the game, and those that are here, where's the best bang for your buck to do the next thing when it comes to precision setups on planter for the guy that hasn't done much and the guy that is well into his game now for a little while?
Downforce is always king,
okay,
no matter where you're at. But there again, it's a hard question to answer, and I'm going to say it depends.
Okay.
After a 5-10 minute conversation with each grower, because I haven't met a grower yet that doesn't want to get better. Mm-hmm. And every grower is at a different point in his technology or his equipment setup. And I mean, we get growers that come in that are still using technology or lack of technology of planters from when I started 20 years ago, and they're just wanting to say, how can I get one notch better, mm-hmm. because I am on a budget.
Yep.
Perfect. I appreciate the opportunity to help somebody that wants to get better. Now, if somebody comes in and says, you know what I got is good enough, and he's content with that, we'll just help him with maintenance parts or whatever.
Okay.
He's still going to have an advantage there. And this isn't going to sound bite, but the guys that really want to get better, that have already implemented a lot of the steps and the things that we suggest, and that are constantly testing things on their farm and challenging the status quo, those guys are really fun to work with. And we've put what we call try it, buy it, put a piece of technology on. I mentioned Furrow Force. We had 3 or 4 growers put 1 or 2 rows of Furrow Force, the closing system, on last spring. And one decided to outfit his whole planter. 2 of them brought it back, and one said, I really like it, but it's not in the budget right now. And one of them brought it back and said, I don't think it pays on my farm. All 3 cases we learned.
Mm-hmm.
One grower said, there's not a value for me to spend that kind of money on it. Perfect. He knows because he tried. Another grower said, I can't farm without it. So he spent $50,000, $60,000 to have his planter upgraded.
Yeah.
And so it's all about learning and helping each grower try to get a little better.
Second question then is, what's next? I mean, you've seen a lot happen. You mentioned when you started back in the early days and where we've gone basically from there to here. Rich, what's next? And are you excited? Or in my mind, we've seen this technology piece grow so much. It's like that mathematical curve, or the curve that comes up. And now the tweaks are not nearly as exciting because we're flattening out there. Am I wrong? What is the next big thing? And are you still excited, Rich?
I am still very excited. I don't know that you're right, and I don't know that you're wrong, because you know, working with planters for 20 years, you think, oh, everything's been invented that can be invented. There's a product going to be released next month that I don't want to say is going to be a game changer, but it could be a game changer for some growers. And it's still in the planter field. And we've gotten into sprayer technology and this what is commonly called spot spraying and the vision technology is just mind-blowing. And we've been involved in testing that and implementing it on our farm. And the data that we can gather by having cameras on the sprayer has been really interesting. I don't think that's going to stop. The vision technology, I think, is going to drift into to other passes on the farm. Where is it going? I really think autonomy is coming.
I was going to ask you about autonomy. I'm glad you went there. How so?
And it is, it's all down to, you know, grower man hours and the availability of good help. I actually had a conversation with a grower we sold a planter to a few years ago, and he's thinking about a second planter. And he said, my biggest challenge is I don't have an operator for the second planter. He said, if you could get me a system where I can have a second tractor and a planter running in the same field that I'm doing, and all I got to do is manage it, and it runs until it's low on seed, and I reload it, and we can run together, he said, I'd take that next year or for this coming spring. We're not there yet. Autonomy is here as far as the early stages in tillage and then the grain cart operation that some of you have heard about already. But we actually built a little three-point hitch planter to go on the back of a robot that Beck's Hybrid is testing. So it's going to be coming. How fast it comes, I'm not real sure.
See, I wondered on the autonomy part because Charlie gave me the pictures of the Beck's tractor, and I use the bunny ears on that because that thing's...
It doesn't look like a tractor.
It's ridiculous. But I was thinking of the autonomy, especially when we're talking about singulation and our zooming in and knowing where each individual seed goes. Any movement in autonomy, at least on a super small scale, when it comes to replants or finding those skips or something that we can send through fields. In my mind, that's what's intriguing to me. I go around an area, a half acre area, because it was too wet or it didn't come up because I went through it and I shouldn't have, and sending out this little robot that'll go row by row and go and figure out all that stuff. That's intriguing to me.
Yeah, and it might sound out in left field right now, and 5 years from now it might be commonplace.
Yeah, it's interesting.
Yeah,
it's interesting. Well, here we go. So we've made it through. We didn't even get to spraying. Charlie, I don't even know if we got to what you wanted to chat about today, but we filled a lot of time talking about planters.
You know, every time I work with anybody in precision, I walk away with coming back with a little bit nugget that I can take back to the farm. And I think that's a good thing with precision, what they've been able to do with their customers is, you know, so we might not be able to upgrade your planter this year because of finances or whatever, but we're going to give you some nuggets to improve a little bit more.
So on that note, Rich, you've got an event coming up here late this month. What do you got?
The 27th, yes.
Okay.
Will be our annual window meeting with we invite growers or anybody to come in and listen and learn with us, and we will be talking sprayer technology, planter technology, and going back to the basics. We're going to have a session that's going to talk about replacing seed disc openers and you know, maybe do you buy the less expensive ones or do you buy the better ones? So it's advantage and disadvantage, and because, you know, we farm as well. We understand we're in a little bit of a tighter economy right now, but we, like I said earlier, you got to get the basics right.
All right. Well, Rich, thanks for that. That's the 27th starting when?
It'll be 8 o'clock to 3 o'clock.
8 o'clock up at the shop, north of Leesburg, right?
Up at the shop, yep.
All right. Well, if you need more information on that, reach out to us here at the Little Red Barn. We'll get you pointed that direction. Rich, thanks for stopping by. Again, this episode brought to you by Mac America Ag Finance. Up to $3 million on an express loan application. You can get a yay or nay, thumbs up, thumbs down, within 24 to 48 hours for real estate and or infrastructure products. If you need more information or to fill out an application, give them the Northern Indiana office a call, 574-253-3433. Charlie, thanks for making the trip down here on this blustery start to 2026.
Oh, wouldn't have it any other way.
Yeah, you're delivering grain. You're going to have a check in your pocket soon. So, yeah, of course, you don't care. Rich, again, same to you. Thanks for coming down. This has been very, very educational for me.
Well, thank you very much. I enjoyed our time together.
And we'll have another episode of The Little Red Barn coming up 1 week from today. Like, subscribe, tell your friends. The Little Red Barn has got it. This is The Little Red Barn.